Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Man, what a weekend! What a weekend! And I hope that you enjoyed some rest, some relaxation, even around the football that gives you heart palpitations. Or at least gives me heart palpitations. I'm not sure if it does the same for you. I just know I cannot get enough. And I say it all the time, but I'm going to repeat it. We are spoiled rotten as NFL fans because this is what we get. This is the bar that has been set so high by the NFL, and yet somehow we still see history on the field every weekend. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. So we're asking you what moments you will take away from this weekend on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And a lot of you are already finding me. 855-212-4227. We'll work in some calls this hour. Also want to get to the Browns deciding on their next head coach who does not have head coaching experience. And we still want to go back and talk about the Titans as the sixth seed surviving the Baltimore Ravens with more of Derrick Henry and the Niners in a dominant performance against the Vikings. So we're going to get to all that this hour, but right now we want to head to Lambeau Field and welcome Packers insider Wes Hodkowitz, who is with the team, Packers.com. Man, it was good to see football back at Lambeau Field in January for the first time in 3 years, Wes, in a tight game early, tight game late, actually, but a tight game in those final moments. What was the atmosphere like?
It was incredible, Amy. When you look at it, it was the second biggest, I think, postseason crowd the Packers have ever had. It's been 3 years since they had hosted a playoff game at Lambeau Field. Just the adrenaline and anticipation of it. You could tell people were just excited and geared up for it. But it did get tight. And with that second half, I mean, it was something where I think people, you know, they were on the edge of their seats there hoping and praying that Aaron Rodgers would make that one or two, you know, big passes down the stretch to get this team where they needed to go. Aaron Jones, the run game wasn't always producing in the second half, so it needed to be on Aaron Rodgers' shoulders. And him and Davante Adams, as they have so many times over the last 2 years, really came up clutch and propelled the Packers back to the NFC title game.
Well, looking forward to asking you about specific elements of this game, but I have to ask, so that last third down conversion, the Jimmy Graham reception, that one took a while. Watching it on TV, I even caught some of Wayne Larrivee on the radio network, and it was drawn out, so he couldn't even use his classic dagger line. But the Davante Adams catch, one of those brilliant throws by Aaron Rodgers cross field where only Davante can grab it. What was the reaction like at Lambeau when he hauled that reception in?
Just stunned. I mean, when you look at it, this game, they were phenomenal on third downs, whether it was that Graham catch that you were talking about or Davante Adams, some of the plays he made down the stretch. On that one in particular, Adams said that they kind of just drew that up beforehand. Rodgers basically called that on the spot. It took him a little bit longer, Adams that was, to get to where he needed to get to on that fade route, but Rodgers just dropped it in on a dime, and Adams got basically about a yard or two separation that he needed to pull that in. A remarkable performance when you consider, I mean, it's the most receiving yards by a Packers player in franchise postseason history. 160 receiving yards on 8 catches, 2 incredible touchdowns. They were just on another level tonight. Rodgers even said it afterwards. Adams was kind of, he was just on one when you look at the run that he got on. And for so many years, it was Rodgers and Jordy Nelson, and Rodgers talked about it. He feels that connection now with Davante Adams, just being able to be on that same wavelength. And to come up in that situation with Russell Wilson playing as strongly as he did in the second half, the Packers needed an answer, and Davante Adams was that player.
Another moment that was massive was when Preston Smith came up with that sack on third down. And it came at a time where it really looked like the defense was sucking wind. Did you get the sense that they were exhausted, kind of hanging on for dear life?
Well, it was one of those things where they were not giving up any explosive plays, any giant gains, but it was just yard after yard of chasing Russell Wilson around the football field. And although Wilson got off to a slow start, you've seen enough of these games against Green Bay and really in general to understand that Wilson is going to find ways to produce. He's going to find openings, and he really did. He came out in the second half, got back-to-back touchdown drives, and just seemed to be getting into a rhythm and making things happen, stitching things together, even if he didn't have that consistent backfield. And every single time it seemed like the Packers got within just a fingernail of being able to sack him, he found a way to squirm away. And finally, Preston Smith was able to get that third down sack. They lose 6 yards on it. That was a situation where Seattle had a chance to go down to the field and actually, you know, pull ahead, and they got the defensive stop. Both Preston and Za'Darius Smith, just exceptional in this game. Za'Darius in the first half, Preston in the second, being able not only to get themselves off the field, but just give the entire stadium a real emotional boost.
Mm. Wes Hodkowitz is with us from Lambeau Field, from Green Bay, covering this trip to the NFC Championship now for the first time in 3 years for Packers.com. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. So you mentioned Aaron Jones, and while he had a couple touchdowns, they weren't able to necessarily get a ton from him or the run game in the second half, and yet he's been a revelation this season. How much has that changed the offense to have the other Aaron in this kind of a groove?
Yeah, I think it's huge, Amy, because for so many years, everybody was talking about, hey, when is Aaron Jones going to get more touches? When is he going to get more opportunities? With Matt LaFleur coming in, and he said it going back all the way to the scouting combine in February and the owners' meetings in March, they wanted to get the ball in Aaron Jones' hands, and they did this season. He did. He had a 23-yard carry on the first play of the game, and that was his big game for the entire contest. Finishes with 62, but just some really hard-nosed runs when they really needed them. I thought Seattle's linebackers, Wagner and Wright, played fantastic. I mean, they did not give up a lot of penetration inside. And for Jones to be able to kind of step up in small increments to get them off center, I thought that was critical. But like I mentioned, I mean, this was a game in which they weren't going to get those 140 total yards from Jones. They need to manufacture in other ways. So whether it was Jimmy Graham coming up on third down or just Davante Adams' performance, they were able to do enough offensively to get out of this thing and get back to another NFC title.
Such an interesting week for fans of the Packers, or really just the history of the Packers, with Mike McCarthy finally taking another job and going to the Cowboys and getting introduced. And yet here are the Packers getting set to host this playoff game a couple days later as the number 2 seed in the NFC. And a lot has been made, obviously, of the success in Matt LaFleur's first season now. Other than running the football, what changes has he made?
You know, it is incredible when you really break it down, because, I mean, you look at the message that he sent to this locker room from the very beginning, Amy. I mean, when he changed the color scheme of the hallways at Lambeau Field, when he put a basketball hoop in their team meeting room, it was just the culture shift. Not necessarily that there was something they need to get away from with Mike McCarthy, but just kind of setting his own foundation and the vision he had for things. The other thing that really stands out to me, too, is just his play calling. I think a lot of times, you know, he's so willing to kind of distribute the credit and kind of deflect things away from himself. There was a play that really stood out to me tonight with Davante Adams that actually was on one of his touchdown passes early on. They came out of a 13 personnel package, 3 tight ends, and that was something that they were looking for man coverage against Seattle. They finally got it, and he did kind of this post-corner route and was able to get open. And afterwards, Adams said that was the genius, Matt LaFleur, kind of just coming up with that and being able to install that and call it at exactly the right time to be able to get this offense moving. You're seeing so many of those kind of Shanahan-type principles with the multiple tight ends, bunch formations, a lot of motion in the backfield. But at the end of the day, it's up to LaFleur to really push the right button at the right time I thought this game was exactly that, Amy. Whether it was his performance as an offensive play caller, whether it was Aaron Rodgers with so many people kind of doubting him and where he was at, and if he could still shoulder the load at this point in his career and how things have gone, it just was a full-fledged across-the-board performance. And when they needed to dig down deep late, when maybe there was some adversity going their way, they found a way to get those answers. That's been my biggest takeaway from Matt LaFleur this year. He always seems to find a way and has the right words at the right time to motivate that locker room.
And it's clear that they're hearing the message. And a lot of people have said, you know, it's not that Mike McCarthy's a bad coach. Clearly, he's got a lot of excitement now generated in Dallas. But maybe the message got stale. Is that it?
It's tough. I mean, there's a certain line of thinking there, you know, out there with coaches that once you get to maybe that 10-year point, that's where it gets tough to keep things fresh and keep things new. And I just think when you look at Rodgers' career, when you look at McCarthy, sometimes I think Andy Reid's the best example of it. Although I know certainly things didn't, you know, don't always go the right way for guys when they get to the, you know, these Super Bowls and things like that. But he's had a phenomenal run in Kansas City after he had a phenomenal run in Philadelphia. So I just think that for the Packers right now, this message that LaFleur is sending, not only to Aaron Rodgers, but to Aaron Jones, to Davante Adams, the way he's connected with this locker room, they felt like they were getting not only a tremendous football mind, but a guy that can really lead a locker room. And, you know, he's done it in his own way. He hasn't been a carbon copy of anybody. He's just been himself. And I think when you talk to guys in this locker room and the run they've got on this season, that's what they turn it back to. The fact that not only is Matt LaFleur being himself, but he lets those players really, you know, express themselves in their own way as well.
Wes Hodgkiewicz of Packers.com with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So what did Coach LaFleur have to say about getting to the NFC Championship in his first year as a head coach?
Yeah, it's been a tremendous run, and they have more out there. I mean, if you know anything about the Packers story right now, they've won 6 consecutive games, but their last loss was to San Francisco.
Right.
So there's a lot of motivation to go back there and change their fortunes and kind of change that story that came out of the first game. Seeing the adjustments they make are going to be critical, because if you know anything about LaFleur, he's not really the guy that sits down and smells the roses when they're there. You can tell he's going to look at this afterwards and kind of take stock of everything. He's already pushing towards the San Francisco game. He has his eyes on that, but definitely very proud of the way that his team persevered through this and how they managed to find themselves now in an NFC Championship game after everything they've gone through, after all the changes this past calendar year. I think he's a guy that's appreciative of this opportunity and wanting to go back and feel like righting a wrong that you know, kind of haunted them that first game against the 49ers, when maybe not all the I's were dotted and, you know, T's were crossed. They feel like they have more to prove.
So going back to that game, they lost 37-8. Offense was really difficult to come by. In fact, they did not score in the first half at all, and they were already down, 3 touchdowns-ish by the time they got to half. I remember a lot of pursuit of Aaron Rodgers, and he really got roughed up a bunch. What stands out to you about that game?
Yeah, what stands out to me is that was the bar, and it showed the Packers where they need to get to. Because I think for so long it's been about, okay, this has been an amazing run. They've exceeded expectations, but now it needs to kind of change too. This is a team that is one of the final four and is trying to, you know, make that run to a Super Bowl, their first one now in almost a decade. And that game against San Francisco, it just showed you how small the margin of error is in really all three phases. Jimmy Garoppolo made a couple nice throws in that game, but largely it was based on being able to run the football effectively, move the chains offensively, and not make mistakes. When you look at the defensive performance, it was just a suffocating outing. Very similar, I think, in many ways to what you saw with the Minnesota Vikings this past weekend. It's not easy to run against them, not easy to get offense against them between the hashes. A lot of times, you've got to find ways to get the ball in open space and create for your playmakers. I think that's the challenge for Green Bay going back into this rematch. Can you get Aaron Jones going, whether it be at the run or the pass? Can you find ways to make Davante Adams dynamic, much like they did tonight with the motions? Coming on the crossers. I think there's a lot of positives. Tremont Williams said it afterwards too. They feel like they're a much better team now than they were 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago. And there's a very big, you know, motivation right now to prove that.
All right, Wes. So the $1 million question before I let you go, how familiar are you with Yellow Weasel?
That was a new one for me. As many times these are, when you go back to New York and, the game against the Giants. I think that's where they were going with big dog for Mercedes, with Mercedes Lewis trying to get the ball to him there. That's the only call I think I've been, able to actually pick up this season. They're always thinking of something new. And I'm guessing, you know, with how closely they play those things to the vest, not only are we not really going to have a great definition for some of these, I'm guessing there's more to come.
Oh, my goodness. It was trending on Twitter. I've never seen anything like it. It was so funny. All right. You can find Wes on Twitter at Wes Hod, H-O-D. It's Wes Hod Kuitu. We love to have on the show from Packers.com and a victorious Lambeau Field. Happy New Year to you. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, same to you. Thanks, Amy.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Third down. Ford is inside. Inside pass rush. They'll get him. D Ford wrapped him up and dropped him. He is back. D Ford slid inside and lined up over their left guard, Pat Elflein. And out of a two-point stance, the spinner just ate him up there. Third down and nine. Here comes the gold rush. Cousins back. Throws out right. Intercepted by Richard Sherman. And Sherman will take it back inside the 30-yard line. Dropped on the Minnesota 28-yard line. Your best players are playing their best right now.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Greg Papa on the San Francisco 49ers Radio Network. The weekend started, the NFL playoff weekend started with Joe Montana on hand at Levi's Stadium for the kickoff between the Vikings and the Niners. And to me, that set a very high bar just to see him there and the smiles, and Jerry Rice was on hand. What an awesome atmosphere for the Niners, the top seed in the NFC, hosting the Vikings, who had survived from wild card weekend as the sixth seed. And early on, you could tell the Niners were taking all of the excitement, the adrenaline in the crowd, and just channeling it. They were amped up. They were ready to play. It was a near perfect offensive drive to start things off for the Niners. And it set the bar. It showed you what the Niners are capable of, as Jimmy Garoppolo is hitting four different receivers. He's going 5 of 6. There's these quick passes, great efficiency. His first playoff start, which I think a lot of people would tend to overlook because of what we've seen him do, but also the fact that he's not a rookie. But even when he was with the Patriots, of course, he was behind Tom Brady, and then he missed that season with the ACL, and the Niners had hit rock bottom and had to climb all the way back. The highlight for the Vikings was that answer for them in the first quarter. Stephon Diggs with a touchdown pass over a cornerback that kind of loses his footing. He stumbles and falls. Shades of the Minneapolis Miracle, though certainly a different stage in the game. But a 41-yard touchdown grab for Stephon Diggs, and the game was all tied up. But once San Francisco got that nose in front again, the Deebo Samuel fumble that got overturned, and that leads to a touchdown for the Niners. They're up at halftime, and the defense stifling after that one touchdown by Minnesota. In that first half, even with the touchdown drive, the Niners D gave up just 4 first downs and only 14 yards rushing. So the Dalvin Cook effect, nowhere to be found. And this is what the Niners defense can do. It can not only take away your top option, it can take away your second and third and fourth options as well. Meanwhile, the Niners, they find some offensive groove there in the third quarter. There's the Kirk Cousins interception that leads to another touchdown. I really appreciated the third quarter scoring drive in which the Niners didn't even bother to throw the ball. Every single snap was a run play. They don't even have a Derrick Henry, but they can dominate because of the offensive line, because they were manhandling the Vikings in the trenches, which is hard to do. It was a game in which I felt like you could see the Niners flex their muscles, but I was impressed with the Niners as well that they didn't have any shades of rust. We definitely saw that with the Baltimore Ravens, that they came out looking like they were out of sync. But I didn't see that with the Niners. And that defense gives them a soft place to land. So a scoreless second half for the Minnesota Vikings. They only managed 7 first downs, 147 total yards. And the final 27-10 really kind of gives you the story. First NFC championship game since the Niners last made it to the playoffs in 2014. Tevin Coleman with a huge game, over 100 yards, a couple of touchdowns. Kyle Shanahan, just so matter-of-fact about it. It was kind of neat to see his family up in a suite. So Mike Shanahan, one of my favorite NFL coaches ever, and his wife there. And they said, or Mike Shanahan had said before, that he was far more nervous for Kyle than for himself. But here is Shanahan, a win away from getting back to the Super Bowl, sight of what he would probably say is his biggest failure to this point in coaching. And yet he's calm, cool, and collected.
We knew we were coming into the season, we were going to have a chance to compete in every game. And didn't really look at it much past that. I mean, even when we were 8-0, that's all you look at. And it's, you know, we thought we could compete in every game, and we had won them up to that. And we went that all the way to the end.
It was rocking out there today. Those fans were screaming. They were loud. I mean, it was a fun atmosphere. But, yeah, as far as just everything, it was, I don't know, you got treated just like another game. You know, you go out there, the field's still 100 yards long, and just got to go play football.
He really does feel like the perfect emotional fit for Kyle Shanahan, doesn't he? Jimmy Garoppolo was 11 of 19, 131 yards. What, have you seen this theme in the NFL playoffs where because of the run game and the defense and the ball control style, the quarterbacks are throwing for 150 yards, or in Ryan Tannehill's case, hasn't hit 100 yards in either one of the games yet? Crazy stuff, but this is what has happened. The pendulum in the NFL has swung so completely back in the other direction, and I've written columns about it, and I've talked about it. Last year, high-powered, high-octane offenses. We had an MVP with 5,000 yards passing and 50 touchdowns. And the teams that went to championship weekend were the Chiefs and the Rams and the Saints and the Patriots. For extremely high-scoring offenses, historically so. And now here we are, back to the basics in the NFL. Run the ball, stop the run. Run the ball, stop the run. Sure, Aaron Rodgers can chuck it, and we just saw MVP Mahomes in the Chiefs come back, and they needed that quick strike ability to be able to rally from the hole they were in. But for the most part, the best teams in the playoffs run the ball and stop the run. It's been amazing to see. Again, that pendulum swinging all the way back the other direction. So no, football was not reinvented in the 2018 season. As for Kirk Cousins, 21 of 29 with a touchdown and an interception. He got picked off by Richard Sherman, but also got sacked a half dozen times. The Niners came after him. One of the moments that I'll take away from this weekend, Nick Bosa. So he's on the ground, appears to be in all kinds of pain with a core injury, right? He's laying down. Athletic trainers are talking to him. His teammates are around him. The crowd goes nutso, starts chanting and yelling and all this stuff. And it was almost like that's just what he needed to rise from the dead. And then he starts celebrating and hooting and hollering. That was such a fun moment. If you haven't seen it, it's all over social media. So that was definitely one of the moments that I'll take away. That defense is incredible. And so the Niners will host the NFC Championship. Number one hosting number two for a shot at the Super Bowl from the NFC. All right, I promise we're going to get to your calls next. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. I have heard from one Ravens fan. I'm so proud of you, Chris. I will read your tweet as well. What will you take away from this weekend? Not just you Ravens fans, but all football fans. What will you take away?
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Marcus Mariota goes in motion to the right, direct snap to Derrick Henry, jump pass to the back of the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by Corey Davis. Tennessee offensive coordinator Arthur Smith broke out all kinds of creativity, and it works for the Titans' third touchdown of the game. Marcus Mariota came in at quarterback, went in motion to the right. They direct snapped it to Derrick Henry with an old-fashioned Sammy Ball jump pass to Corey Davis in the back of the end zone, and Tennessee extends its lead. I don't know that there is enough Pepto-Bismol in the entire free world to settle the stomachs of this sold-out crowd of Ravens fans who are sitting now in stunned disbelief.
I don't ever look at all that or get into all that. I just focus on doing my job and, you know, try to be efficient and try to finish runs and, you know, keep moving forward.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Derrick Henry doesn't know about your Pepto-Bismol, Baltimore fans, but boy, did he have another game for the ages. And his jump pass, listen to this, his jump pass went to Corey Davis, as you hear it with Jerry Sandusky on the Ravens radio network. Remember a week ago, we were talking about Derrick Henry turning 26. And on his 26th birthday, he celebrated with a huge performance and a victory at Foxborough in New England. Do you know it was Corey Davis's 25th birthday on Saturday when he caught that jump pass for the touchdown from Derrick Henry? Arthur Smith did not get a job this year as a new head coach in the NFL, a first-time head coach. But boy, he is getting a lot of attention for the way that Derrick Henry is busted out, the way that Ryan Tannehill has played since taking over for Marcus Mariota, the way the Titans offense had such a resurgent second half. And now here they are into the AFC Championship as a sixth seed after taking out number three and then number one, both games on the road. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 195 yards rushing and the jump pass for the touchdown. Saw a lot of Tim Tebow being evoked on Twitter. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. So I have one Ravens fan who is sending me a tweet. Thank you, Chris. I have mad respect for you. He says on Twitter, "We're here," meaning we as Ravens fans, "just got our mouths full of humble pie, couldn't recover after that first interception that resulted in a touchdown, panicked, abandoned the game plan, no excuses, time to reload." Again, Chris, I respect you for weighing in. It was definitely a tough start for Lamar Jackson. He throws that first quarter interception off the hands of Mark Andrews. So we're not talking about a terrible pass. It was a ball that went off the hands of his tight end. And then he gets the personal foul for the helmet grab of Kevin Byard, which, by the way, Byard has quite a track record against the Ravens. In 3 years, four interceptions against Ravens quarterbacks. And the points off turnovers were definitely a big deal in this game. Jonnu Smith had the juggling catch in the corner of the end zone that put the Titans in front. And then Baltimore, who hadn't failed on a fourth and one all year, comes up empty, gets stuffed on fourth and one, and Tennessee right away turns around and scores again. And this time it's Khalif Raymond, 45 yards, full stride, boom. Just like that, 14-0. It was the first time the Ravens had trailed by 14 points all season. And immediately the conversation turned to, can the Ravens rally? Can they score quickly if they need to? And at this point, it's so early in the game, they didn't need to abandon the game plan. They managed a couple of field goals. They were only down eight at the half. And yet it did feel like mentally they never really recovered. And the failed fourth downs as well. Give Tennessee all the credit for stuffing the fourth downs over and over and over again. Twice in the fourth quarter, once in the third quarter, and the Ravens had no answer for Derrick Henry. 855-212-4227. Jim is listening in Baltimore. Jim, what do you say?
I don't know why Greg Roman didn't put in on the fourth and ones, didn't put in Pat Ricard and Gus Edwards, because I'm sure they would have made one of those three fourth downs, probably the first one. Lamar did not look comfortable at all. He looked rusty. He looked like he did last year. You know, I don't know if it's. I'm convinced that this 2 weeks off. I've been a Ravens fan for a long time, and what I've noticed about the Ravens are if they get a long time off, they're not a very good team. Anything more than five days off, they're not. Personally, me, I would rather go 10-6, 11-5, going as a wild card, and play every single week because you don't lose any momentum. Now, a big
no
part
way,
of
man.
Loss,
there's
was,
no way you would cough up home field advantage so that you and a week off at this point in the season. It wasn't just a week off for them, though, because they also didn't play the majority of their starters for the whole game in week 17. And so I would agree with you. They look rusty and out of sync, but they're still only down 8 points at the half. 8 points is nothing. It's a single score.
I'm getting that. That's what I'm saying. I don't know why. I don't know if Gus Edwards got hurt somehow and they decided not to use him. I mean, on one of those fourth and ones, they could have went to Hill. He could have threw a little. Hill could have went to the sticks with 1 yard, and he gets his 1 yard. I don't understand the play calling of Greg Roman. It's like he completely forgot what he's doing. Gus Edwards.
They definitely didn't use either Gus. Mark Ingram was hurt, but between the two
exactly.
of them, they didn't have nearly as many carries as what they normally do. The crazy thing is Lamar Jackson had more than 500 yards of total offense, but the three turnovers, the four sacks, it was a lot of those firecrackers without like the actual or duds. They're like loud firecracker like or fireworks duds without the show and the display. So yeah, it was stunning to watch, but he can't turn the ball over like that because you're playing against a ball control team in the Titans and also the quarterback with the highest passer rating in the entire NFL this season.
Lamar just seemed more nervous to me. Just seemed, you know, especially when he got that penalty. What are you doing? I don't understand what
I mean,
he
maybe
was,
hyped
I don't
up.
Get it.
I can understand being hyped up, but that doesn't explain the second half.
No.
The first half, the way they started, sloppy, a lot of mistakes, really, again, out of rhythm. But I don't, the second half, maybe if they convert one of those fourth downs, we're talking about some momentum there. But credit the Titans because they stuffed it every time. Jim, thanks so much for your call. I appreciate it. And I have respect for you for showing up. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Let's talk to Andrews in Mississippi. Welcome to After Hours.
How you doing, Amy? My name is Andre.
Oh, Andre. I'm sorry. My fault.
Yeah, you sound like a Raven fan. But anyway.
Wait, hold on. Did you say I sound like a Raven fan?
You sound like a Raven fan. You can't get my name right. Lamar couldn't get the calls right.
So because I got your name wrong, that means I'm a Ravens fan? That's odd. You better come up with something better than that before I hang up on you, and then you can call me a Ravens fan to your friends. Hurry up. Let's go.
Hey, let's talk some real football. It was a good game. It felt like 1996. But the truth was, those kind of running backs, those kind of quarterbacks never win when they come down to the playoffs. That's just the truth of it. We need to stop anointing these running quarterbacks and just stick with the old program because they know who wins out.
Yeah, I don't know if that's completely true, but certainly the way that they've played the last 2 years in the playoffs, you can say that. There have been running quarterbacks in the past who've had success, but he can also throw the ball. I mean, he had a couple of games this year in which he had a perfect passer rating, and he had 530 yards, or he accounted for more than 500 yards of offense, which was most of his team. The issue is that they were 1-for-4 in the red zone, and that there were 3 turnovers, and that on all 4 fourth downs, they got stuffed. So there are certainly things that you can point to where the Titans defense was prepared and ready and made sure that they would give up a lot of yards, but wouldn't give up those the touchdowns or the plays that would allow the Ravens to grab momentum.
Well, I tell you this, I want to see what these teams do when they get behind, because it's easy to play when you're in front most of the game. I want to see what's going to happen this week, because I know who's going to go to the Super Bowl, and I know who's going to win the Super Bowl. It's real calm and it's real simple to me. Out of the AFC side, I'm going to go with Kansas City. They're going to get the Lamar Hunt trophy, that state trophy. And on the NFC side, it's going to be the Green Bay Packers. They're going to win. And at the end of the day, the trophy going back to Green Bay where it all started. So you can record this. You can put it on your commercial break anytime you want to.
And if you call me back next week and say, do you remember? I'll say, nah. I know people make predictions all the time. I'm sure you knew exactly what was going to happen to the Texans-Chiefs game, right? You had that one all pegged.
I won $12,000 today. Now, I didn't have it how it went down.
Exactly.
But
winning. You can guess. It's easy to guess, but to know what's going to happen on the field from week to week, from quarter to quarter, that's an entirely different thing. All right, Andre, thank you so much for your phone call in Mississippi. I appreciate it. 855-212-4227. We'll get back to your calls. Also, Kevin Stefanski, reportedly the next head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And boy, do I have a lot of questions. But even before we hit the top here, if you look at the box score for Ravens Titans, this is the part that blows me away. 530 total yards for the Ravens to only 300 for the Titans. When you look at the passing yards, 345 passing yards for Lamar Jackson, 83 for Ryan Tannehill. That is more than he had in Foxborough, but it's only 11 more than he had a week ago against the Patriots. He doesn't even have 200 total yards passing. And yet, the Titans defense, again, 0 for 4 on fourth down against that Titans defense. And while the Titans are perfect in the red zone, the Ravens are 1 for 4 and the 3 turnovers. So the Titans go on the road into Baltimore, into a purple haze, and they do not turn the ball over. Really amazing what they've done as the only surviving wild card into Championship Sunday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.